Adios, Babylon. Welcome to... I am Michael Melendez.
And I'm Renette Senham.
And today we are once again graced with the delightful presence of Kelly Moreno.
How sweet is that? Good to be here.
We are here to provide news and social and political op-ed commentary from diverse and alternative sources in order to counter the effect of mainstream corporate-owned news media, thereby helping to grow an informed citizenry.
And, of course, any opinion expressed during this hour is solely the responsibility of these speakers and in no way reflects the opinion of KVMR, its staff, supporters, or anyone else associated with the station.
So now please join us as we endeavor to say
adios to Babylon.
So today, well, we're in the middle of a fun drive.
Yes,
that's a big one,
big old pledge drive.
And in order to really kick up the dust, we have Cindy Sheehan waiting online to join us here. And we're going to talk about her gubernatorial race. She's thrown her hat in the ring. She wants to be the governor of California, and she's got all sorts of interesting things to say. She's got a ten plank platform that we'll be going over, and I'm
that'll
sure
knock your socks off.
We're gonna knock socks today. We're gonna kick skunks, knock socks. We're gonna be out there doing it.
So Cindy Sheehan really doesn't need a formal introduction, but we've got one for you anyway. Mm-hmm.
Well, for those of you who don't know Cindy Sheehan, she is an internationally known, renowned peace and social justice activist. Sheehan's oldest son, Casey, was killed in Iraq on April 4, 2004, and many came to know about her and her work when she set up peace camp near the Faux Ranch of the then President George W. Bush in Crawford, Texas, in the summer of 2005. Since then, Cindy Sheehan has traveled the world, working with fellow activists demanding peace and working with others to help create a world that is peaceful and more economically secure and equal. Cindy Sheehan has published 7 books, been arrested for peace about 21 times, is currently a resident of Vacaville, California, and the mother of 3 surviving children and 4 grandchildren who are her love and her inspiration.
And on that note, welcome Cindy Sheehan.
Oh, thank you.
Hello there, Cindy. This is Michael speaking.
And this Hi there. How are you guys doing?
Good.
We're really good today.
So
I see we're gonna get some snow and rain this weekend.
We hope to.
Wouldn't that be great? We've been doing the dances.
We need a lot of that stuff.
I was gonna go up to Tahoe for a little break, but I guess I'm gonna have to pass this weekend because, like all Southern Californians, I do not know how to drive in snow and ice, so I don't want to plunge off a cliff on my way there.
That's a good idea,
but
Cindy.
But we need it, so I'm grateful for that.
We do.
Yeah, and there are a lot of cliffs there, and we hope there's a lot of snow.
Yes.
So stay home. And
for some people like it. They walk to it, but I need to stay away. I slipped on ice just walking this year, so can you imagine me on the road in a car?
Okay, we support you staying home in Vacaville.
Yes, we do.
I'll stay.
We need you come the next election.
Yeah.
And until then. So you actually made your first statement that you were going to run for governor of California on one of, I think, the women's show on KVMR a year ago.
Yes, it was. I've been thinking about it since 2010, but yes, I did. We did talk about that the last time I was on.
And what triggered it? I mean, what were the issues that ultimately got you to jump in?
Well, first of all, I think that politics needs to be more local. And I have run for federal office twice, and my newest book, I Left My Marbles in San Francisco, The Scandal of Federal Electoral Politics, is about my federal electoral efforts and how almost nearly impossible it is to crack through that if you're not a member of, you know, what I call the War Party or the Bankers Party, and that's just the Democrats and Republicans. And so I know that California is a big state, and it's not exactly a local election running for governor, but I think it's more of an opportunity to really localize the issues for people. And Jerry Brown, I must admit, was the first politician I ever voted for when I turned 18. And the thing that got me thinking about running against him, though, was I was driving up to up the coast to some events I had in California, and I don't have a car, so I'm rarely in the car. I rarely listen to the radio in the car, so this time I had it tuned to the local NPR station in Sacramento. And Jerry Brown, and this was back in 2010, like I said, we had like a $26 billion deficit in the state of California. Mm-hmm. And Jerry Brown said that he wanted to raise taxes to deal with half of the deficit, but then the other half would unfortunately have to be balanced on the back of the people who are already vulnerable in the state. And he means, of course, poor people, elderly, students, and homeless people that are already disadvantaged. So that's not, I don't think that is a way to balance the budget off of people, to take more from people who already don't have anything. And so that really got me thinking about challenging the system by challenging Jerry Brown. And, of course, Jerry Brown now we have a surplus, and instead of using the surplus to restore those social services and, in fact, cut fees for university and things like that, he says that we have to save it for a rainy day. And, of course, we do have to have something in store for a rainy day, but I think to run surpluses when we have one of the highest poverty rates, 25% of our population lives below the federal poverty line, which is already too low, right? Mm-hmm. And in education, we rank 48th, 49th, 50th. When I was going to school here, we were near the top or at the top. So to run surpluses in those kinds of situations where we have over a million homeless people and people desperately struggling for survival, to me, is absolutely wrong.
So while we're I'm going to interject here for a second, I want to make sure that everyone knows that 530-265-9555 is the number. We're in the middle of a pledge drive, so if you're listening to Cindy Sheehan tell her story about why she's running for governor, and we do need your support, just like she's going to need the support of everyone who wants to see her in that governor's chair.
That's right.
So speaking of poverty, one of the things that I saw on your web is the EPIC program,
mm-hmm.
End Poverty in California, which goes back to a 1933 program that was it initiated by Upton Sinclair?
Yes, it was, and it definitely, we're using his old program and his old slogan, EPIC, End Poverty in California. I went to UCLA, and I was a history major, but I concentrated in California history. So that campaign during the Depression really caught on, and Upton Sinclair was narrowly defeated by the Republican for governor of California. And interestingly, the only reason he was defeated is because the Democratic machine worked to defeat him, because his program was so popular. And it was having the effect of pulling the Democratic Party way farther to the left than they wanted to go.
Mm. That was in 1934. It was a 1934 bid for governor by Upton Sinclair, who was a famous author, actually.
Yes, author, activist, socialist. Yes. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a very inspirational campaign. And one thing about me running for governor also is that California, strangely, has never had a female governor.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't even had a person of color as a governor since we first became a state.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a California Mexican-American man, you know, back like in the 1870s or 1880s. So I think it's time that we give, you know, our program and, you know, a perspective of caring for humanity a chance, I think, rather than going down the same road.
Mm-hmm. Cindy, you meant Cindy, you mentioned the S word, socialist.
Uh-huh.
And you're running on the Peace and Freedom Party platform.
Right.
And on your website it says the Peace and Freedom Party, founded in 1967, is committed to socialism, democracy, ecology, feminism, and racial equality.
Right.
Because socialism has such a negative connotation in so many people's minds, I am not one of those people. Talk to me about socialism and why that's important to you, or why it's something that you support.
Well, I support it because I think basically the root word for socialism is social, and it's a people solution. It's a community-based solution. It's workers taking over control. And, you know, workers, the participating in the running and the prosperity of their company or their business. It's about communities, everybody in the community having a voice. You know, it's about cooperatives and collectives, and it's about sharing the wealth. Now, California also has... even, you know, as well as a vast poverty, as much as you would imagine, we have a huge income disparity. And we simply just want 100% of the people owning and controlling 100% equally. Because we do own and control 100% of the wealth, but not equally. That's the that's the catch word. We want everybody controlling it equally. And capital, you know, socialism cares about the social, the person. Capitalism, the root word is capital. So what do they care about? They care about profit, and they care about capital at the expense of people and workers.
And so, Cindy, how are people responding to you? Have you seen a shift over the course of the last few years?
Yeah, whenever I am speaking to people, in a one-to-one basis, or if I'm in a situation where I am speaking to a crowd of people, everybody is so into the message. And I think the Occupy movement did our movement a big favor by putting the concept of class and the concept of the 1% and the 99% into the mainstream dialogue. And so people are understanding that we are being, you know, for want of a better word, screwed over. You know, when the governor says that we need to give more, there's going to come a point where we don't have any more to give, so that the people at the top don't lose anything. And, you know, we just found out that from Oxfam that 85 families, 85 people in this world, I'm just talking about 85 people and families, own more wealth than the bottom 3.5 billion people on this planet. You know, so there's going to come a time where we are going to say, no, it's worth it to us to work together, because not only do we have to strive for some more income and wealth equality, we have to work together to stop the destruction of the environment that capitalism and these people at the top are causing. And it's come to a point where it's urgent, where we have to really take a good look at our system and see, you know, what is worth keeping, but what we have to work together to change and to have positive change. Because when the politicians say, oh, I'm for hope and change, they never, you know, nobody ever asked them, define change. Are you talking about good change or bad change?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we have to do. And we are telling people in my campaign and the party and this movement is that we can't do it by ourselves. We need millions of people working together to change this. And that's going to take people putting some effort in for the future of our state and this country and the world, and the future of our children and our grandchildren. And, you know, you read that my grandchildren are my inspiration, but as well as all of the children of the world, that we need peace, we need a bigger share in the prosperity, and we need a planet that is going to be healthy for our children and grandchildren and the future to live on.
Speaking of the planet, and one of the major planks of your platform is the environment, and we can easily step into fracking there and talk about the current governor's position with that, which seems a little bit mushy, perhaps, maybe, but is maybe heading in the direction of support of that activity.
Well, in my perspective is it's not very mushy. My perspective is that he is openly in favor of fracking, and they, as a matter of fact, have just opened more of the Monterey Shale formation up to fracking. And then we have to look at the governor's so-called Bay Area, Bay Delta Conservation Plan, and how that is really diverting water to oil companies and big ag, and it's not about sharing water more equally between the two parts of our state at all. And so fracking is, especially in this climate of drought that we have here, it takes millions of gallons of water to extract the fossil fuel, and it takes, it kills the environment, it puts poisons into the groundwater, it actually makes our state more vulnerable to earthquakes, as if we need that. So fracking is a disastrous process. And instead of putting those billions of dollars into resource extraction, that money should be going, of course, I don't think anybody would disagree with me, into public transportation that runs on renewable, sustainable forms of energy, more public transportation that it's easily accessible for us, and we can get from point A to point B in a reasonable amount of time. And bike trails, you know, I'm a big biker. I came through Nevada City. I kicked off my tour to peace there when I rode my bike across the United States. So we need bike lanes, protected pedestrian paths, and things like that. So I think that's where. And then, of course, investing in clean, renewable, sustainable forms of energy instead of investing in fuel that is ruining our environment and is not infinite.
Right. Well, investing in industrial hemp would be good. Investing in our education system once again would be good.
Oh, yeah, hemp is also a big piece of our platform, and we support that bill to legalize hemp and recreational cannabis for sure.
For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to Adios Babylon, and Cindy Sheehan is on the air with us. She's talking about our gubernatorial bid, and this is a pledge drive for us. At you can contact us. You can call us at 530-265-9555, 1-800-355-5867, or certainly log on secure at kvmr.org to make your pledge.
Mm-hmm. And if you're out there, out and about, there is a membership table set up at the Briar Patch today from noon to 6. So if you're over that way, you can drop in and sign up in person. They have a few cool thank you gifts right on the premises. Swing by and renew today. Or again, call 530-265-9555. We have some lovely people out there waiting to take your call. But right now, speaking of lovely people, Cindy Sheehan is talking about her platform and the things that she believes in. It's really continuing your activism and wanting to take that to the position of governor of the state of California.
Well, yes, and people ask me, what am I going to do if, I don't win? And I just, the same thing I'm doing today and the same thing I'll do tomorrow, this is just another way to get the message out. And I just want to impress upon your listeners that with the top two system in California, of course, my party was against it. I was against it. We think that it's anti-democratic, that it limits choices. But in June, and that's when I'll be running in June for the primary, the open primary, is that we have a really good chance of at least coming in second, because there are several Republicans running. The Republicans can split that vote. And, with recent polling, somebody could come in second with as little as 13 or 14% of the vote. And when I ran against Nancy Pelosi in 2008, I came in second with 17% of the vote. And, of course, that was before Prop 14, and that was in the general election. But there is a you know, better than average chance that I could possibly come in second. And to me, coming in second, we have a little mantra in our campaign, second place wins the race, because if I come in second, then I think we'll have a bigger platform to talk about these issues, to really encourage people to be part of our epic campaign. I know I come from the California that is working class, that struggles, that, you know, that we help each other over the bumps and through the valleys, and to just inspire people that we don't have to live like this, that we can have a better life if we work together. If we work together to defeat the current paradigm, that it's possible. And so I'm hoping that if we get second place, and if we get a chance to have a bigger platform, that we'll have a chance to debate Jerry Brown, even though he still hasn't announced officially that he's running, although he's raised like $17 million already for his reelection campaign. So that's what it's about. It's about really a movement. It's not about an election. It's about a movement.
Mm-hmm. It's about visibility, too, and mm-hmm. getting out there and putting out the issues that aren't really being discussed in a really big way, in an effective way. You're listening to KVMR FM, Nevada City, KCPC, Camino, Placerville. This is Adios Babylon, and we're talking to Cindy Sheehan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right, Cindy, as far as giving some hope as well. If people actually understand there's a fighting chance for another party to make it, people will consider. I know a lot of times people say, well, no, I've got to vote, you know, Democrat or Republican. I don't want to throw away that vote. And how else do you contend with that? How else do you, you know, show folks there's other options?
Well, we, of course, since I was running against Nancy Pelosi in 2008, and I ran as an independent, or in California we call it declined to state, we think that voting for the system or the status quo is throwing away your vote. Mm-hmm. First of all, that's what we think. But secondly, you know, we're out right now doing signature gathering, and if people want to help with signature gathering, they can go to my website, Cindy2014.org, because we need 10,000 signatures to even get on the ballot.
Okay.
And so for June, so just it's just this, you know, vote for me in the primary, because it's almost guaranteed that Jerry Brown will go to the general election. You know, vote for me in the primary, and then give us a chance to talk about our platform, to inspire people to really vote for real change. And so, of course, Top 2 was designed to work against us, mm-hmm. but we're just really, like, confident this year that we're going to use Prop 14 against the system. And we just think that would be amazing. We had recently a victory in Seattle, where Kashama Sawant from the Socialist Alternative won for City Council of Seattle.
So, that was amazing.
Yes, I think we are gaining traction, and I think people are seeing that there are viable solutions out mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. We just have so long been propagandized that, you know, that the Democrats and Republicans are our only choice. And to me, even if the Democrats and Republicans were significantly different, two parties is not enough for a nation mm-hmm. of over 300 million people, for mm-hmm. sure. You know, for a viable democracy that works for the people, we need many different parties and many different alternatives out there. Just if we're going, you know, solely just to move the main parties into our direction, the people's direction, not the corporations or the war machines' direction.
Correct.
Cindy, what is Prop 14? You've mentioned it a couple times.
Oh, that was the top two primary. And I think it was 2010, the people of the state of California voted it in. And that means that before we had, you know, the Peace and Freedom Party, the Libertarian Party, the Green Party, the Democrats, the Republicans, and a couple of smaller parties. And so before Prop 14 came into play, if you were a member of any of the parties, you would just have to win that party's primary to go to the general election. Mm-hmm. And so now it's an open primary in June where you vote, you can vote for who, remember before you could only vote for, you only got a ballot for your party.
Mm-hmm.
in the primaries. Now you get a ballot with everybody, and this is for every election now except the presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
And when the first year was 2012 that we had Prop 14 in play, and that means that almost every, I think every office that it was relevant to was either a Democrat and a Republican, or two Democrats or two Republicans, because it's obviously designed for the person with the candidates with the most money to go on.
Mm-hmm.
Not people like me or, you know, Green Party or, you know, even Libertarian Party. It's not meant for us. It's meant for the people with the most money to go on. And that's the way California politics, and that's the way U.S. politics works, really, is the people with the most money. And we're just saying that, you know, the amount of money you raise doesn't necessarily confer any kind of legitimacy to your to your campaign. It just means that, you know, that some very shady people are donating a lot of money to your campaign. Mm-hmm. Most of the time. So even though we're against Prop 14, and we have our party has worked with the Green Party and Libertarian Party to challenge it electoral, I mean, through the court system. We're against it, but you know, we're just thinking that this time it may work for us and not against us.
Mm-hmm. So another plank in your platform and nailing down those planks are items such as no National Guard overseas, no support of empire.
Breaking. I love that you use straight up, straight out there, empire.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There's no gray area there. Tell us how you want to approach this.
Well, you, as you know, California sends billions of dollars to the federal government for empire. We have used our National Guard overseas since 9/11, especially for these wars for empire. And we need to keep our resources here in California, whether that's personnel or whether it's our financial resources. We have a lot of work to do here in the state. And another thing that the Cindy Sheehan administration would do would be to prevent recruiters from going into schools to prey upon our military recruiters. To prey upon our children, and we've heard as young as 10 years old,
mm-hmm.
our kids are being you know, recruited, lied to. My son was recruited out of community college.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that would mean that we wouldn't get federal funding for education, but we can divert some prison funding to education funding, because we spend $60,000 per prisoner per year in this state, and less than 9,000 per K-12 student per year. So it's just a matter, there's not that we don't have the resources, it's just the priority of our resources, we believe, is totally screwed up. But we believe that a California that says no to empire is a big step to overcoming that empire, because if we were, and we all know this, if we were our own country here, we'd be like number 7 or 8, you know, as far as our economy goes. And population, we're just in this state, we're bigger than many countries. So a California that is going along, and we always say, of course, too, that EPIC stands, also stands for Elevate Peace in California. a peaceful, prosperous, and environmentally sustainable California goes a long way to spreading it across the country, from California to Washington, D.C., a people's movement of peace, prosperity, and environmental sustainability.
And out of that grows a greater opportunity to foster social justice.
Oh, absolutely. Unfortunately, when I talk to people, they're not as appalled as we are about the prisoners in the state of California. There's a lot of people who believe that they're there because they belong there, and you know, we know that they're there for non-violent marijuana crimes, other non-violent crimes, and mostly crimes related to poverty. And of course, there's a higher percentage of people of color in prisons, and so people aren't so really concerned about that. And as a matter of fact, Californians voted to make prisons punitive instead of rehabilitative. And so, but I talked to them about the amount of their tax dollars and other resources that go to the prison industrial complex. And not just our state prisons, but privatized prisons. Jerry Brown gets a lot of money from the Corrections Corporations of America, and he has been using his courts and his Justice Department to fight against letting these nonviolent offenders out, and releasing some of those resources to be spent on schools and social services. So that's what I try and tell the people, that you know, we could make a more justice system by investing those resources in education and social services. If we did that, then the prison industrial complex could, you know, eventually become obsolete.
Mm-hmm. It would wither if we took away its source of income.
Right, and so would the military. My son joined the military because he was promised a college education. What if university and colleges, state universities and colleges and community colleges, were free again like they were when I got out of high school?
Well, that's another issue.
It's a human right. It's not a privilege for the 1%. It's a human right. And that's what I keep telling people. You know, we have to believe and internalize the fact that these things are human rights. We have been browbeaten since we were very young, these things are only privileges for the wealthy. Mm-hmm. And if you're not wealthy, there's something wrong with you, mm-hmm. not something wrong with the system.
Yeah, right. You're worth dispensing.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We're nothing. We're useless. We're useless eaters.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Consumers. No, we're not mm-hmm. citizens. We're consumers. And but which, you know, we're talking about social justice. We're talking about police. Well, actually, we were on the peace plank here, talking about not supporting empire. You know, there are a number of states, I think there are like 10 or 12 states now, who have some kind of grassroots legislation that's working toward not supporting NSA activity.
Right.
And California is one of those states where there's something stirring. How does this work out in terms of the empire, the police state planks that you're leaning on here?
Well, we would definitely support something that banned NSA spying in the state of California, but of course we know that it's a big business in California too. So, you know, and federally as a party, we support the abolishment of the NSA and the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, you know, that's a lot of our resources go towards agencies, terrible violence by agencies. So we definitely would work towards that and with that.
And Cindy, being that you are an activist, you're outspoken, you are running for a political office, how do you protect yourself from being surveilled?
I'm pretty sure I'm surveilled.
I know, I have no doubt, but do you even yeah. take any steps? I mean, seriously, how can you have a platform? How can you face debate if you're being listened to? I mean, they talk about destroying the democratic process. Do you take extra steps?
I just make everything I do very public.
Okay.
You know, so you know, when I get death threats, I publicize them. Mm-hmm. When anything I do, you know, as a matter of fact, I've had this one time I was going to go protest DynCorp in Washington, D.C., and their manufacturers of drones. Mm. Their security got my private phone number and called me. And said, you know, what are your plans? I said, well, who are you? You got my plans. They're on the website. You know, that's what we're going to do. You know, so I set up a peace camp in Washington, D.C. in 2010 called Camp Out Now on the one of the Washington Monument. And we found out through Freedom of Information Act that somebody else had requested pertaining to something else, that the U.S. government hired an Israeli spy firm to spy on Camp Out Now.
Well, it seems like the Israeli training, too, has also played a real important role in militarizing our police forces, as a matter of fact. From what I've been reading, we have a lot of Israeli soldiers coming over and actually training our American forces.
Well, absolutely, and it's this real evil synergy, I think, because it's also been shown that you know, the walls and the Gaza and the checkpoints and things like that have been modeled off of our reservation system here in the United States. So I think the United States and Israel has some pretty horrible synergy going along those lines. And then we train death squads in Latin America. You know, it's just something that the people of Latin America, and I have to say that this is my inspiration. I spent a fair amount of time in Venezuela. I spent a fair amount of time with President Hugo Chavez. I wrote a book about it called Revolution, a Love Story. And my inspiration is that we have governments now that don't work for us. They don't work for the people. I think it's pretty obvious who our governments work for. And the people of Venezuela and other Latin American countries have elected very far-left governments who have not worked against the people, but with and for the people. And so I see it's been done. I see it can be done. And Venezuela, California actually is bigger than Venezuela in population. But if they could do it in Venezuela, why can't we do it here? Because when Hugo Chavez was first elected, they had an over 50% illiteracy rate. Now they have joined the ranks of what we would consider literate countries because they use the resources of Venezuela to educate the people, to have an engaged electorate citizenry. They're not consumers. They're active citizens in their government. So we can do it. I know we can do it. We just need to. I think the biggest problem is convincing people that the problems they're having, you know, of course there's personal choice and, you know, people make bad choices, but the problems we're having mostly are because of the system. Mm-hmm. And not because of them. And that's another good thing about Occupy. We got a chance to talk to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't usually talk to each other. We usually stay in our little, you know, dino mobiles, one person, one car, one person. We stay in our houses watching TV. We don't go gather anymore and talk to each other and find out that we are having common problems and what could the solutions be to that. And solution is usually revolution because it's usually 180 away from the status quo. Mm-hmm.
Cindy, talk about the impact of your relationship with Hugo Chavez. Because you guys had developed a friendship.
Yes, I really, first of all, personally, he is was a very warm, you know, people's person. He wasn't a phony. I've met many of our so-called leading politicians in the United States, and the thing I get most of from them is like they've built a wall around themselves. So like logic, law, and emotion can't reach our politicians. Well, Hugo Chavez loved people, and he loved Venezuela, and he loved the people of Venezuela, and they had such a wonderful relationship because when the U.S. tried to overthrow him, the people rose up and said that, you know, even people who didn't vote for him, they said, right. How dare you? This is a democratically elected leader of a sovereign country. We want our president back. And so they had a real special relationship. And I really think that I since Hugo Chavez became president, I've seen many, like I said, other left-wing governments that are from the people rise up, and people in Latin America rise up against privatized water, you know, against privatized utilities, against the IMF, against the World Bank, and they've had a lot of success. So I think that Hugo Chavez is really going to go down in history, no matter what the demonization of the U.S. and the U.S. Corporate media has done to him. I think he's going to go down as one of the most significant figures of our century, for sure.
You're listening to Cindy Sheehan speaking on Adios Babylon here, KBMR. Telephone numbers here, 530-265-9555, 1-800-355-5867. We are we're in the middle of a pledge drive. We need your support. Cindy's signed on today to contribute her support for this station, and we're talking to her about her gubernatorial race. Just jam-packed full of all sorts of good information here and commitment.
And we'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of our perennial members. KVMR is your radio sweetheart, our Valentine's season membership drive. We'd like to thank Kathy from Penn Valley, Kathy from Yuba City, Barbara from Sacramento, Joseph from Nevada City, Claudia and Lee from Fort Bragg, Molly from Nevada City, Eric from Nevada City, Julie and Mark from Nevada City, Linda from Penn Valley, and Nori from Nevada City. And we'd also like to thank all of you who are new members, renewing members, and who continue to support KVMR.
That's right, and it's because of KVMR and our listener support you get to listen to Cindy Sheehan today. That's why you matter.
Yes.
You certainly do. So tell us more. Tell us more about how your bid for the governorship may change the way we do business here. As far as, again, you know, the thing that keeps coming back to me over and over again is this unholy distinction that's been created between consumers and citizens. Everywhere you turn, there's almost no one who supports the status quo that wants to talk about citizenry, that wants to talk about citizenship and the responsibility and the type of national community we could have if we could really engage in that type of dialogue versus the consumerism that's sold repeatedly and repeatedly in order to support the unbelievable level of profitability, the almost what should be illegal criminal profitability in terms of corporations. How is your bid for governorship could affect this?
Of course, we, you know, in this capitalist society, the only thing that the average person has to trade is their labor. And our labor has been exploited for centuries, where the 1% pays us as little as they can to ensure that we can still consume and that we can still be relatively healthy enough to labor for them. Mm-hmm. So what we want to do is take over the means of production. That for so long, we have been the only people that have had to be subjected to the loss. And that's wrong. And we, like I said, we need to share in the prosperity. And Jerry Brown, and not just Jerry Brown, you know, I don't want to pick on Jerry Brown because he's just like, you know, part of the system. The system for so long has told us we can't raise taxes on the corporations or they'll leave the state. And we say, leave the state. You know, you guys can go. We don't even care. What we want to do is keep your business belongs to the people of the state of California. You have for so long sucked the state dry of our energy that we are going to put your business under the democratic control of the people. We need to raise, I hate talk about minimum wage. We talk about a living wage. Everybody, even people who are retired, even people who choose to do research, writing, art, mothers who choose to stay home with their children deserve a living wage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm more interested in talking about a maximum wage than a minimum wage, because the wage that the 1% or the CEOs make is 400 or 500 times mm-hmm. more than the average worker makes. So we're for having a program of increasing steady income equality through these kinds of programs. And I can't see how anybody except, you know, those 85 families or the rest of the 1% would be against something like this.
Mm-hmm. Well, people, you know, people see it as a threat in many different ways. A lot of people, you don't have to be rich to feel threatened. There's an interesting paradigm at work here where people have bought, I mean, and they're not being served by the 1%, but yet they buy into it. And
well, it's because of the system of propaganda. And John Steinbeck, another Californian, said, you know, the reason socialism hasn't taken root in America is because nobody believes they're poor. They just believe they're temporarily embarrassed millionaires.
That's a great quote. I remember seeing that.
It's very true.
We have to realize that there is enough that everybody can be comfortable without having so many people be in abject poverty, with so few being so fabulously wealthy. And that should not be a threat, that we shouldn't want to raise those 25% of Californians out of poverty. You know, why does that threaten people to have children be able to eat healthy food, to have a roof over their head, to not have the fright of having their parents incarcerated just because they're poor or because they're in a disadvantaged a population? So we have to realize, and this is what capitalism does, it pits us against each other.
Yes, it
does. You know,
yes.
And we should work together and realize that what is said is true. When everybody is comfortable, then that's a better society. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're working for, and we're hoping to convince people that is better for humanity, not just for you, not just for your neighborhood or your state, but for all of humanity.
That's a great note to go out on. Cindy Sheehan, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for all that you do with your political and social activism. We wish you the best of luck in all of that with what
you
do
can
out
I
there.
Just say our website's very quickly.
Absolutely, please
yes.
do.
Okay, support KVMR and support Cindy Sheehan for governor, cindy2014.org. And then my activist website is cindysheehansoapbox.com.
Great.
We really appreciate you showing
you
up here
so
today.
Much.
So much, Cindy.
Thank
and
you.
And good luck on your keep this kind of media going, that's for sure.
Thanks so much.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes. So, again, 530-265-9555, 1-800-355-5867. There's still people out there waiting to take calls. And following Adios Babylon today is a special show, showing of Under News with Jeannie Keltner. She's going to be in, and it looks like Mr. Steve Baker is approaching the microphone.
Well, I was just going to say, I believe she's having on Paul Craig Roberts, or is it Craig Paul Roberts?
Paul, I think it's Paul Craig Robinson.
Who was a Reagan administration assistant secretary of the Treasury, whose views have changed slightly since the Reagan administration. Yes. And I just think it's very important for folks out there to realize that we just gave Cindy Sheehan an hour of KVMR's airtime to talk about this rogue candidacy for governor.
And she rearranged her schedule to be on the show today.
That's right.
And I think another thing that's very interesting is that if you just think about, as she was talking about, trying to finish second in the primary, if you want to be a smart voter, that might be an option. Because, if, as she says, if the Republican candidates, the several candidates, divide the Republican vote, there's a possibility that an actual third party candidate could get that
place.
Nomination.
That's right.
Obviously, Jerry Brown is going to finish first. I mean, in the primary, but that does not give him, the post. There's an election in November
with
the two top finishers.
But his coffers are filled. And he's ready to go.
He's ready, of course, but...
So, if you want to strategically vote...
That's right.
I think you have heard some information that might be vital. If this is something that's cool to know, and you appreciate Adios Babylon and the great work that Renette and Michael put in and Kelly has put in over the years, please give us a call right now and show your appreciation. 530-265-9555, 800-355-KVMR. Where else are you going to be hearing this sort of information that you've heard over the past hour? Where else? Here. 530-265-9555.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, so get on the phone, give our people a call, and stay tuned for Jeannie Keltner and Under News.
And we'll see you next week on the radio.